and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds Talk Movies. My name is Taylor Cole. I'm going to be your host today. Joining me, as always, I have my two fellow co-hosts, Drew Garrison and Tristan Benz. Drew, let's start with you. How are you doing today, man?
Doing pretty well. If I could play it on our on this podcast, I would be playing the Interstellar OST because it's dope. It's banging. Really wish we could do it without getting copyright struck.
It's certainly something, and it's Christopher Nolan attached to Interstellar. And as soon as I saw both of those, as soon as I saw Christopher Nolan in this movie, I was like, oh, Hans Zimmer is involved in this, isn't he? And damn, he was indeed. But Tristan, before we get into our retrospective today, how are you doing?
Don't let me leave, Taylor! Don't let me leave! This is one of my favorite fucking movies. Like, this is my favorite, like, non-IP movie, so I've been champing at the bit for us to talk about this on the show, so I am jacked. I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. Let's fucking get into it.
Let's just get into it. I think you got a great mindset here, Tristan, because you clicked on this podcast, random listener listening, which we appreciate you for listening. Today, we are going to be taking a look back at the 2014 critically acclaimed hit movie, Interstellar. I'm going to be honest with y'all, though. I don't have too much of a spiel on this one. I usually go through some kind of hoopla of just trying to paint a story, and I don't really have that here today. Because this was my first time ever watching Interstellar. But before we get into the cast, crew, and all my thoughts and your thoughts, I gotta ask Tristan and Drew if they have any background info to add here.
In terms of our personal attachment to the film, or just in general?
I guess personal attachments. You guys kind of know what my spiel is about.
Oh, just making sure.
Anything to paint a picture.
Well, about this. Since this is, I'll go first. Since this was one of my picks that made it onto the quote-unquote respected wheel of this podcast, which, you know, I still protest and will continue to protest until Drew and I get to talk about everything everywhere all at once. But even so, the wheel smiled upon me with this pick. This is one of my favorite movies. It's number 4 on my favorite movies of all time list, but it's my favorite non-IP film. Just from stem to stern, top to bottom, I love everything about it. And I first saw it in my freshman year of college, and I was so taken with it that I watched it like back to back over the course of a weekend. I think I watched it a Friday, and I was like, you know what, I gotta watch this again Saturday, because I just couldn't stop thinking about it. Must have watched it 17 times by now. It's just such a banger. I got so into it that my mom for Christmas one year got the script of the movie printed out and like got a copy of it for me. So like I love me some Interstellar. I got the novelization. Like it's my shit. And as you said, Hans Zimmer, man, Hans is on the beat. I have a whole playlist of Spotify tracks called Hans on the Beat, which is just Hans Zimmer, you know, being on the beat. And let
that
me
is
tell
so
you, this is one of the headliners. This whole score is one of the anchors of that playlist. Because man. God, what a picture. What a film.
Well, Drew, do you have anything to add?
So, when this movie came out, I was on a Matthew McConaughey sort of, this guy is the shit sort of thing. And still think that to this day, but...
Wait, clarify. This guy is shit or the shit?
The
because those
shit.
Are two completely... Okay.
He's like the shit.
He is the shit.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because we're about to have an argument at the very beginning of this podcast.
I mean, hey, Drew and I were passing each other like ships in the night, because this is the movie that made me like Matthew McConaughey. Before this, I found him irritating.
Watched a lot of his stuff before Interstellar came out, and Interstellar was the thing that probably pushed it into like, okay, maybe I should dial back on the Matthew McConaughey love a bit, but otherwise, Interstellar was just one of the beats in my Matthew McConaughey sort of look at everything that he is a part of sort of thing. So,
this was really, now correct me if I'm wrong, but both of you probably have more to say about this than I do, but did it kind of feel like this was the movie that really showed people like Matthew McConaughey could really act?
No, I'd say that was Dallas Buyers Club.
Was that before this? Because I thought this came out first.
Because this came out in 20... Yeah, Dallas Buyers Club was first. Came out in 2014. Dallas Buyers Club was 2013. But I mean,
so this entire knew we could year, act though.
Before then. You know, movies like Contact and
The Lincoln Lawyer.
The Lincoln Lawyer. What's the... With Samuel L. Jackson. Where he kills the racists. What is it? This is going to bother me. Keep talking. I gotta Google.
I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about, right? A Time to Kill. That's what it is. A Time to Kill.
Time to Kill. Yeah. See, that's the thing, though. With McConaughey, I think there was always that camp that was like, oh, he's actually pretty good. But then there was always that camp that's like, okay, he's a good looking dude who has his shirt off.
Hey, Ghost of Girlfriend's Past was actually pretty good. Okay.
And wasn't he in, like, She's All That or something? Romantic comedies, like, just what Tristan said.
Yeah, that's where he got to start.
I think 2014 was just that year. You mentioned Dallas Buyers Club and also this movie here.
And True Detective.
It's really...
Oh, yeah. Detective Russ Cole, I think is how it's pronounced.
Which I think people... I haven't seen the show, but people consider his character to be arguably the best in the entire series.
As they should.
So, yeah, I think both of you... have painted quite a picture here of how you feel about this movie, how you felt about it afterwards, how it was for Matthew McConaughey, who was, as Tristan mentioned, a rom-com guy, and just this 2014 year between all these movies really became more serious there. So it's going to be interesting to talk about this movie in more depth. But before we get into that, here's a synopsis for Interstellar, along with some of the cast and crew, courtesy of IMDb. Quote, a team of explorers travel through a wormhole in space in an attempt to ensure humanity's survival, end quote. And boy, you know, we talk about synopsises a lot on this podcast, but I feel like somehow they got it into one sentence, and I think it's good enough, but it's hard to describe this movie to another person.
Honestly, I think, like, the best thing you can do when going into this movie is, like, go in not with no that... Huh?
Not no shit.
Yeah.
That's probably the best, to be honest with you. It's kind of like, don't even tell people about space travel if they don't know about it. Don't tell them about any of the sci-fi or science BS. Just let them go into it blind. I think that's the best way to do it. If possible.
It's actually ironic because the original person who started this, I think her name was, what was her name? Okay, so I remember, like, before Christopher Nolan got on board, there was someone else who wanted to write it, and she was friends with a scientist, and both of them were like, I wish that a lot of the sci-fi concepts that were in these movies were more, like, driven in real science. And Christopher Nolan came in a little later when they were, like, trying to push it off the ground, and that's how he became director. So it's, like, it's honestly ironic because they wanted to make it as close to possible as they could get, and I think they succeeded.
The Thunder agrees with you.
I didn't know what to think about the science in this movie. Because I'm not a smart man. I'm not a scientist. I don't know how much of this is actual, like, rooted in...
Apparently, it's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Like, I've done a bit of the research, because I'm like, how accurate is this? Is Christopher Nolan pulling my leg here? And apparently the scientific community is like, you know what? They ain't wrong. Like, there's some... Christopher Nolan put in the work. You know, he put in the hours, he stayed hungry, and he devoured, and he just put a banger of a film out.
Did not expect the Dwayne Johnson to come in.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Best verse of all time. But, yeah, that's just something Chris Nolan's kind of known for in his movies, though, is everybody on that crew are so talented, and they always seem to put their best foot forward with everything. Does all of it work? No,
for me it does.
I really appreciate it. I appreciate the effort and the hard work put into these movies. And you see it, never Chris Nolan movie. But getting on to the cast here, the film was directed by Christopher Nolan and written by Chris Nolan and Jonathan Nolan, which I believe they're brothers.
They are.
Stars It stars Matthew McConaughey as Cooper, Anne Hathaway as Brand, Jessica Chastain as Murph, Michael Caine, or as Tristan would like to put it.
Hold on. Michael Caine.
As Professor Brand, Bill Irwin as Tars, voice, Josh Stewart as Case, voice, David Gayasi, I think that's how you pronounce that, as Romilly, Wes Bentley as Doyle, and we have a lot of other notable names. Like, just, it's a lot. All right, I mean, John Lithgow's in the movie,
Casey Affleck's in the movie, and we gotta talk about, you know, Mackenzie Foy and Timothy Chandelier as young Murph and young, I can never remember the boy's name. The son's name. What's the son's name? That's one of my favorite movies, but I always forget his name.
Tom.
It's Tom.
Tom, there we go. I always call him Timothy Chalamet and then Casey Affleck.
That was Timothy Chalamet. Damn it.
Chalamet.
Words are hard, okay? We're over here. We're about to talk about the science of this movie and shit. We can't even get somebody's last name right.
Hey, this man, is gonna be a disaster. Hey, we're just men, you know? We're not perfect.
Let's go ahead and get in this movie, though, with our general thoughts. And again, I have not seen this movie before this retrospective. Tristan has it on his favorite movies of all time list.
And I find it blasphemous that you didn't see this movie. It's like, Knives Out was one thing because it was still new. Interstellar has been around for like 8 years.
Mm-hmm. It's been almost a decade.
I know. It's pretty nuts, to be honest with you, that I've not seen this movie. But, and Drew has also seen this movie, and apparently, based on what he has said before, absolutely loved it. So, who wants to go first here?
Let's let Tristan go first.
I forgot to mention, I also have a framed poster of this movie above my bed. So, like, this is my shit. It's so good. The cast, oh my god, they all nail it. The music, as we've said, fucking nails it. The visuals, oh my goodness, incredible. The heart that this film brings. Is it weird, you know, towards the end, where it's like, all right, you found your daughter, and she's gonna die, but hey, we gotta go on to adventure. I'm like, all right, shit, that's, you know, not the best parenting, but hey, like, we gotta wrap this thing up, so I respect it.
Hey, know? He didn't even know if he was gonna be able to come back to raise his daughter.
He didn't. He got that nice moment with her, it was nice. Didn't seem to give a flying fuck about Tom, and apparently neither do I, since I can never remember his name. But even so, like, God, what a, I mean, I know I say this for a lot of movies, but really this is just what a fucking picture. Like, this is, oh my goodness. I, every time I watch it, like, I just feel like enraptured in the story. I'm just like, man, what's going on? Every single time they like have to match their spin with that of the endurance to like dock after, you know, man blows it up. Oh, it gets the blood pumping every time. And when I can never remember if it's Stars or Case, who's like, oh, that's impossible. And then Cooper's like, it's necessary. And you're like, oh, hell yes, Cooper, you're the best pilot in the world. This is amazing. It's just, oh, it's so many fucking fist pump moments, I feel like, even though a lot of it is just like really low key and solemn and like, man, this is really sad, like humanity's dying. But then you get a fucking banger moment like that and the music swells and Hans just stays on the beat and you're just, your pulse is pounding, your blood's a pumping, and you're just begging for more. That's how I feel about this movie.
Drew.
This movie is amazing. Even if like you're not a fan of the sci-fi and everything, if you go in for it for the story, you will love it. If you go in for it for that musical score, you will love it. If you go in it for the effects, oh my god, you're going to be blown away. Nearly a decade later, and it still has some of the best effects I've seen in movies. Not the best, but some of the best. But yeah, this movie is amazing. It's like, every time it feels like that it's slowing down, it finds some way of getting you on your toes again and making you feel tense, even when they're just sitting around talking. It's like, oh, this could happen. It's like, hey, okay, that's good. It's, oh, by the way, you will also be on this planet. 1 hour equals 7 years. I'm like, what? Oh, no. Everything feels like, oh, it's like telling you exactly what's going to happen in a second, or what's going to even happen by the end of it with how they talk about relativity and gravity and how it all, like, just lines up, because that's pretty much Interstellar. It all leads back to Gravity. Maybe this movie should have been the first Gravity.
It all leads back to love.
It all leads back to love.
I went in this movie, not really. I knew a few things. I did know that Matt Damon was in it, because at the time, The Martian had just come out. Or The Martian came out, like, I think a year later. Besides the point, there was like a
It came back, like, weirdly where, close back to back, where I'm like, yeah. Matt Damon, what are you doing?
So I knew he was in it. And I knew it was something with a bookshelf. That's literally all I knew. So I went in this, honestly, considering the fact that this is almost a decade-old movie, pretty blind. And how popular it was. I fucking loved it. I'm gonna kind of steal something from Tristan here. I'm gonna put this on my favorite movies of all time list.
Hell yeah, you are. You are, big dog.
I don't think this movie is perfect. I have some problems. Tom is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
I understand he's went through some shit, but...
No, Tom sucks.
Tom sucks.
Tom sucks. That's why I don't bother remembering his name.
We'll get into a lot of stuff from here. But the way that the guy, old buddy from Yellowstone, what's his name? Doyle. The way Doyle dies is kind of fucking stupid. The fact that he's right there at the shuttle the entire time, and somehow he doesn't get in the shuttle in time.
Well, that's because he had the survival skills of a Boy Scout, you know?
Yeah, it kind of seems like that. But other than that, like, the stuff this movie tries, and I think succeeds, at wanting to tell. The stories it's trying to tell with Coop, his family, with the themes of it, with the fact that, like, the world's dying, and John Lithgow's character, Donald, I don't know, it's Donald, right?
It's Donald.
Three pages in
there. He's supposed to be, like, our age.
Yeah, that kind of fits, considering the time period. So, like, there's a scene where Donald's talking about, like, back in my day, there was a new piece of tech every day, and he was kind of like, yeah, it's bad, but at the same time, it's kind of beautiful. The fact that they're living a simple life and stuff like that. And there was something, like, I think, throughout this movie about them being explorers and this brave new frontier and all that stuff that's just really cool of a storyline. So all that kind of shit was just so fucking great. I love the relationship with Coop and Murph throughout this movie and how it ends. I thought it's a little cheesy, you know, she lived long enough to see Coop one last time. But I just really thought it worked. Let's go ahead and get into some of the topics we have for this retrospective. What do you guys want to talk about first?
I mean, shit, I don't know.
Can we talk about first?
I'll leave it to you guys, because I'm going to go off on probably everything.
Okay.
Or at least be very excited about everything.
For starters, we had this documentary-style opening that I really didn't expect. Then we go into what the blight is and the fact that the world's dying, and this whole way that they introduce what the world is like in this futuristic time. I think it's a little vague, but it's so interesting.
Yeah.
The fact that all these crops are dying, the fact that the world seems to be a little united in a way because of the fact that people are dying. The crops are dying, all this stuff, so everybody's starting to become more united. Like Coop mentions, there's no more armies, that NASA has went down, that other space associations have went down, and also to the point to where they're teaching in school that the moon landing was fake, just so kids would never dream to go into space, and instead focus on Earth. Like, shit like that, I find that very intriguing for a world.
You know, when I was first watching this in theaters, I thought of how ridiculous it was that people could actually believe the moon landing was fake. And then, well, present day happens, and it's like, it's a whole thing.
I also loved Coop's reaction to it, where they were like, how are you going to reprimand your daughter? And he was like, well...
It's like, I think I'll take it. Like, yeah, you're fucking good.
There's
dad,
a baseball game tomorrow. And there's going
to
be cotton candy and all this stuff there. I think I'll take her to that. And just the way he delivered that line is so fucking good. And that's how I think you get a character to be so likable. It's just everybody in the audience is just like, that's a good dad right there.
Like, this guy's cool.
And then he leaves his family right afterwards. It's like, fuck.
He had to save the world. But that's one of the best fucking lines in the movie. When he's like, oh, I got a family, Dr. Brand. He's like, didn't get out there and save them. And you're like, oh, shit. That's a fucking good way to put it, Michael Caine.
But how did you guys feel about the world of this movie?
I really like it. I wouldn't say it's where I have most of the problems with the movie, but it's where I notice the clunkiest dialogue, like at the beginning when they're when he's on Earth and they're doing all this exposition to like set up that the world is shitty. I'm like, okay, I like everything that's happening. All these performances are good, but this is clunky as shit. Like the bit where he's like, you know, one of those useless machines they used to make was an MRI. And if they still made any of those, they would have found the cyst in my wife's brain before she died instead of after. And that would
but they don't explain why the MRIs are gone.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, so it's good to know that your wife's dead. I don't know why you're explaining this to this teacher. I also don't know the relevance that it has to this situation. But, like,
yeah,
go
it was
off,
just
I
to
guess.
Show more, I guess, the Coop being sympathetic and
teacher kind of get why. Dick. I get why. But it's also like, I was like, there's got to be a more organic way we can slip this in here, because this is just not, that's not how you talk in a parent-teacher conference. Even so, like, it's even though some of the dialogue can be a bit clunky, like, the level of world building, I feel like that, you know, they fit in that first, you know, 20, 30 minutes when they're on Earth. You're like, oh, wow, like, just rough. Like, and that much is clear. Like, this is, we gotta, it's like, they gotta get out to space. They gotta find some shit. Shit is dire.
Mm-hmm. But also the fact that the technology, while it has, like, semi-affected the architecture, everything inside and everything looks mostly the same. Because as far as we do change up our styles as time goes on and everything, it's like, this is supposed to be, like, the near future. So having it to be, like, we're having flying cars or anything like that would be a bit ridiculous. And instead they have it to where, oh, we have this upgraded technology and everything, but it's like a lot of stuff still looks nearly the same with very few differences.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Drew, because I think that's something that helps for at least me. I don't know how with you guys or everybody else who's seen this movie, but it helps me kind of relate more to the characters. The fact that it is a near future and the fact that everybody is still, like, you're not seeing characters, like, Coop's not out here in this uber-futuristic outfit with this flying car and shit like that. And instead, also, the Blight is so vague and stuff like that, that, like, there's there's sci-fi shit in this movie that's like, oh, okay, you're not really explaining. But it still somewhat feels like a realistic world that people could live in.
Yeah. Well, and also in terms of, like, the technology and its style and whatnot, like, it would make sense that things wouldn't change that much, because they're talking about, like, if they're not even making MRIs anymore and they're acting like the moon landing was fake, like, it seems like technology has stagnated.
Yeah.
It's like, because everyone's too busy.
They're focused
on
farming
alive
and surviving.
Yeah.
But yeah, although I do agree with you, Tristan, I think it is a little clunky at the beginning because they're trying to cram a lot at, like, okay, here's why the Earth's dying.
Yeah.
Here's why Coop needs to go save the world here in a few minutes.
They're trying to make us care before they shoot everyone into space.
Yeah, and they do a pretty good job at it, despite the issues with some dialogue pieces. But overall, I do think the fact that they keep it vague enough really fucking helps. And the fact that we never truly learn what the Blight is, or what exactly happens in between. Like, we just get snippets of what happens to these kids in between, too. I think that's fucking great. And it especially helps with, like, a character like Tom, who I really don't like, but I kind of feel like I'm not supposed to like him. So I think the movie did a great job. Instead of showing me exactly why he starts to get some disdain for his father and stuff like that. But how do you guys feel about the Coop family, the Cooper family here?
I like the family, and it's like all of them have really normal reactions to everything. So it's like, I feel like all of them, from at least in the beginning, it's like you can understand the family dynamic and everything, and how they all fit into it, how they all have survived after, you know, the wife's death and everything. It's all really nice and everything. As time goes on, it's like I understand all of their positions and everything. I do think, and this is like one of the only, like, three things I can say I consistently, like, ever dislike about the movie, but Murph does get on my nerves with how she's still mad at her dad for going to try and, you know, save her life, the life of literally her entire family.
Drew, do you have daddy issues?
No.
No, then you wouldn't get it.
I kind of, like, I don't daddy issue, but at the same time, I also get it.
Yeah.
Because the thing is I think she kind of accepts her dad went to go save the world. But then, old sorry-ass Michael Caine's character in this movie, Dr. Brand, Professor Brand, I'm sorry, Professor Brand.
I lied, Muff. They're not coming back.
It's like, bro.
Yep. Do and not, he's do just not like, I lied the whole time.
Into that good night. I'm like, bro, if you say that poem one more time.
And yeah, it kind of goes to where she's accepted it and she's trying to help him get home. And she's trying to figure out the equation to figuring out that Brand lied to her. And lied to potentially her dad, but she doesn't know that. That's the thing. I think there's like, that little part of her that's like, yeah, and that's what I think is a little concerning there. And I kind of get that. Although you can still love a person, you could still be like, he kind of has it in him to go on this mission and leave me behind for good. So, I get it. Tom, on the other hand, throughout, like, I know he loses a kid, and it seems like his whole family's dying. Little side note here. I don't know who Topher Grace's character is. I never jotted down his name. He comes into this movie randomly when Michael Caine's character dies, and then he stays the rest of the movie. There's one part where he's so fucking aggressive to Tom. I was just like, why?
You have responsibility. Just like, it's like, right,
yes. And I was like, who are you? Where did you come from? It's like, you could have came out this with such a better argument somewhere. But, like, Tom's character in this movie, I think, is one that starts out as pretty likable.
Timothée Chalamet is likable enough. Like, I forget his name, but I'm like, oh, it's just Timothée Chalamet being Timothée Chalamet.
Yeah, I just found the introduction to Coop's family and the Coop's family in general to be very engaging. Kristen, what about you?
I am a big fan of the family. Literally, the only time I don't like anyone in the family is, like, once he's Casey Affleck, I'm like, all right, get out of here. But we're not supposed to like him. Like, he's just being a stick in the mud and being, you know, stubborn and letting his kid get asthma. I feel like we're not talking enough about John Lithgow. Everything he says, funny. Either funny or poignant. I'm like, all right. I like what you got going on, John. Look, I like when they're investigating the gravitational anomaly. It's like, you want to clean that up? You're not praying to it. And you're like, all right, Johnny. All right, Mr. Lithgow. I see what you're bringing to the table here. But no, I really like the dynamic of the family. I really like. I think for the most part, every permutation of the family, whether young or old, like, I think they all have pretty solid chemistry with one another. Like, they're believable as a family, and especially what you're saying, the dynamic between Tom and Cooper, and especially the dynamic between Cooper and Murph. Like, it's just, I mean, that's really the heart of the movie. Even when, you know, they're not together for, I'd say, what, 2 hours and 20 minutes of this film? Like, those two characters aren't together, but it's still, like, the driving force of this movie. And by the time they reunite, when she's an old woman, yeah, it's like, all right, well, it's weird that you're just immediately sending him away, but it is still, like, heartfelt and rewarding. And, you know, that wouldn't feel damn near as good if they didn't have that great dynamic at the beginning of the film.
Yeah, I think what they were trying to do with her sending with Murph sending her dad away was the fact of the matter that that Murph did have to kind of go on without him, and it's like, he sent me the message and everything, but like, in the end, it's like, you kind of still weren't there. It's like, I have this connection with you, but it's like, I have this connection with my family and stuff more, with my family I've created, and you now need to make new connections because you got no one. It's like, we don't even mention Tom, so I'm assuming he's dead.
No, like, Tom's long dead. You're telling me, let me tell you something. Tom did not make it past age 57. That's my because you know damn well that man was not getting on that spaceship. You know damn well he kept his family on that farm, and he got the asthma or whatever, he got the blight. Like, it's just Tom can keep.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like his entire family kind of weren't too long for the world.
I think his wife and son left him.
Yeah,
that's what I think, and went to live with Murph underground. He didn't want them to, so they had to sneak out.
They still seem like they were,
but
they still seem like, by the way, Topher Grace's character reacted was like, "Yeah, it's not looking good for anybody."
He's like, "You need to get them out of here right now." Where it's like, that makes it seem like they're at the tipping point or whatever. Where it's like, all right, they stay, it's going to be bad, but there's still a chance to get them out.
So throughout this movie, there's this thing with Murph where she thinks there's a ghost in her room. And it leads, long story short, you've seen this movie if you're watching this podcast, it leads to Cooper finding NASA, which is working underground secretly, so they're not under the scrutiny of public opinion. What did you guys feel about this whole reveal? To me, it felt like, okay, we're getting this really cool story where this world's dying and this family dynamic, and I was like, okay, so now shit's about to get fucking nuts.
I love this reveal. I love... Here's another aspect of the world building that I think really works. Tying it into the NASA thing. So, I mean, it starts when he's just around the farm, even before the farm, when they, like, find the drone, and they're like, oh, we gotta get it, you know, give it something socially responsible to do, like drive a combine. And then later, when they're working with the anomaly, and it's like, oh, all the tractors are acting up because of this, you know, gravity error. And then when they go to NASA and you see, like, oh, there's, you know, TARS and CASE, it's like, oh, those were quote-unquote Marines. Like, it's such a cool little aspect of world-building that even, like, war, you know, became more automated, which, I mean, not say even, because we're doing that now, but you know what I mean? Like, these...
Even more than what it is now. See, that's another thing, too, is bringing to what we were saying earlier about how this is in the near future, but it feels like a real world.
Yeah.
Kind of the same thing. There was nothing in this movie that felt like, oh, that's way too futuristic for me. It felt like it's something that naturally could happen 20, 30 years from now in our world.
Yeah. But aside from just, you know, the world building with the technology and whatnot, I mean, I love this whole sequence. I love the bit with Murph and Coop, like, discovering the coordinates. This whole, like, sequence of them actually driving there, I think, is another great moment that really strengthens their relationship and makes you care about the two. And this is one of those things, this whole sequence, especially when they are first, quote-unquote, captured by NASA, and then before they realize what NASA is, I think this is a good example of something that people don't normally give Christopher Nolan a lot of credit for, which he can be, is that he can be funny. But it's not like, ah, ha, ha, we're all making jokes. You're just like, oh, this is funny. Like, Cooper's very clear, like, you're not going to fucking kill us. And but they're like, no, dude, like, chill. Like, we're NASA. Like, or even just small moments where Anne Hathaway's like, oh, clearly she's got a very smart mother. Like, things like that, where it's like, all right, this is, like, they're clever, but you're not, like, guffawing. It's just, this is a good, it's one of the, I would say, despite the fact that it precedes, like, a very ominous, you know, exposition dump that, like, sets up the whole crux of the movie, I appreciate that it's somewhat one of the lighter and more inspiring moments of the film.
Yeah, the best way I would put it is, it's not the Marvel Universe humor that a lot of movies are trying to adopt.
I was trying to go one episode without Marvel, but honestly, if Drew wouldn't have done it, I would have. To be honest,
I wasn't gonna say
that's where I was going to.
I had to, because it's like, this movie proves that you can be funny. You can have that lighthearted in between the really serious stuff and still have a movie where you can just move forward and take it seriously. Whereas Marvel, it's the Joss Whedon formula. Be serious and then make a joke. But this movie proves that formula is not always needed. And in fact, I would say that this shows a superior way of doing something similar to Joss Whedon stuff. It's like, have those lighthearted moments that just make you laugh and feel like these characters are human, but not like cartoon characters.
I think it's just different. Like, sometimes it works better, sometimes it doesn't. It depends on the situation, depends on the movie. But with this, with Interstellar, you have this, kind of like Tristan said, it's not like trying to be in your face to cause this ridiculous amount of laughter in a theater. It's just trying to cause the, that was pretty
good. Yeah, you're like, huh, nice.
But yeah, I totally agree with you guys here. Another person I do want to mention, because I think she deserves pretty much as much credit as Matthew McConaughey gets, that's Mackenzie Foy.
God, she's great.
Who plays 10-year-old Murph. Mackenzie Foy in this movie She's just so damn likable.
She's fantastic in this. And what a dub, because before this, her biggest thing was in being in Twilight, you know? What a glow up.
From her just being kind of... The thing with Tom and Murph and their relationship early on is it's not really to where Tom's being a total bully to her or anything. It's just a sibling.
Hey, just giving her shit.
Yeah, she's getting... And then that moment where she's like, why did you name me after something bad? And then Coover explains it, and just that entire dynamic throughout the rest of the movie with Mackenzie Foy, just so good. 10 out of 10. She's so likable in this role. Whenever we get to the scene where Cooper leaves, it's fucking heartbreaking, man. It brings you to tears. It really does. And it's because of her performance. Kid actors are not always good. We say this all the time.
Yeah. We do. Because it's true. Because a lot of time kids... Here's the thing. I don't want to talk shit about kids, but they're not necessarily the best actors.
But yeah, between Matthew McConaughey and Mackenzie Foy, they really carry the beginning of this movie to me, because the thing is Jessica Chastain does a really good job, but she doesn't interact with Matthew McConaughey.
No, she does not.
The work that's put in is through the relationship between Matthew McConaughey's Cooper and Mackenzie Foy's Murph. So... really good job, because she laid the groundwork for Jessica Chastain to just knock it out of the ballpark.
And if she didn't do a good job, this movie wouldn't have worked as well.
Mm-hmm. Or it would have felt like Matthew McConaughey just carries it.
Probably, which is, yeah.
It's happened before in movies.
He's not above it, same, you know.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's just, it works. This whole thing works. One of my problems, I don't have this on the topics, but this is a problem I kind of had with it. I think Anne Hathaway does a great job in this movie, but I really didn't care about her character.
What? You don't like Brand?
The one thing I did like was the fact that she cost them on the first planet, and Cooper cost them on the second planet. And it kind of shows, like, these emotional decisions, they're costing lives. Because Cooper, he said he didn't do it vindictively. But I kind of still feel like he kind of did it vindictively, to where it's like, no, we're going to Man's Planet. We're not going to Edmund's, because you love Edmund's.
See, I think it's less that he does it vindictively and more he does it selfishly, because he's like, no, I have less chance of getting back home to my family if we go to Edmund's.
Yeah.
Like, which is why she says that bit about, like, oh, I trust will be his objective, when it's like, you know, between you saving the future of humanity or seeing your kids again.
And she gets... she makes these emotional decisions while on Miller's planet as well, which cost them. And so I thought that was really cool, that dynamic that both of them could fuck up. And it's a partnership there. But overall, I just didn't really care. I don't think they gave us much. The fact that we never see Edmonds is, honestly, I think a cool subversion. But other than that, eh.
You don't like her little speech about love?
Eh.
I like it. I like it. It's a good speech, but I'm like, it's the one thing that's quantifiable across time and space. And you're like, ooh, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is, Queen. I love this movie. Quantify that across time and space.
Okay, I do gotta ask this, Taylor, because this was your first time watching it. When you saw Anne Hathaway put her hand in the warping space and everything, were you worried about what would happen?
I kind of, because I was expecting, since this is going into wormholes and stuff like that, my initial thought was, okay, it's the aliens. And then they kept, like, lingering on it. I was like, is this going to be her sometime? Like, maybe she goes back through it, but it ended up being Cooper. I thought that was really fucking cool.
Yeah, I also like that this was one of the actual interesting invocations of the Michelangelo painting, you know, the one where God and man touch. So, it's like, thought it was pretty interesting.
I just want to go ahead and get into it. What do you guys think of that scene where Cooper comes back? He has to leave his family. It's just, like I said earlier, it's just so fucking heartbreaking. It got me.
It is very heartbreaking. I thought it was really good because Matthew McConaughey is just emoting the hell out of the scene. It's like, it's really, really well done. I will, however, say that him leaving for she's, I'm about to call her Anne Hathaway again, Brand, I want to say her name, Brand, her leaving for Brand, him leaving for Brand, was a thing that, like, it's just, it doesn't feel, like, right to me for some reason. It's like, I guess it's like if you take it like these two are, like, going to be there as friends, but by the speech, it implies, like, oh no, this is, like, love and everything, and it's like, I don't think these two had, like, that kind of chemistry. These guys were not, they don't really feel like they were in love, but it's like,
besides I didn't really see it as a romance thing. It's more of a desperate, like, yeah, like, they need each other and they're going to be the most important people in each other's lives, but it's not, like, a romantic thing. It's that they're literally responsible for, you know, restarting the human race.
Maybe I just see it differently because I've always read it like that, and people I talk to about this movie also read it like that. I guess maybe my head's just not in the fifth dimensional plane just yet.
Be that way sometimes. Be that way.
I can see it both ways, though. It's a weird way they end this movie with those characters. Towards you don't know where they're gonna go with it. The fact, I think it's more so just like the trauma they kind of go through throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're the only survivors. It's kind of like a, it, I see the more of like actually just a friendship between Tars and Cooper than anybody else in this movie.
The bromance.
The fact that Cooper doesn't really like Tars at the beginning, and then by the end of it, you just like, just two old motherfuckers here sitting on this porch. This is going to get boring as fuck. We got to go do something. And I just thought that was pretty cool. But with Anne Hathaway's Brand, it's just, I didn't see that as much. I saw that just the word they just shared this horrific trauma that so happened to also save the world. But getting back to Cooper leaving his family, there's something I want to mention before I turn this over to both of you guys again. And it's something Donald, I think it's Donald, tells Cooper. Because I kind of think this is a little bit of a selfish decision from Cooper. Whereas he wants to, because it's kind of hinted that he loved being a pilot and this is kind of his chance to go back out there and do it again. And I think Donald says something like, don't trust the right thing for the wrong reason. I thought that was a really good fucking line.
Mm-hmm.
John Lithgow's great, by the way.
He's great.
If you haven't seen John Lithgow in many things, for the love of God, check his IMDb page out and go watch him. He's fantastic in everything, including Dexter Season 4. Why? You'll see.
Also, I'm pretty sure most people have watched the movie, but this guy is Lord Farquaad from Shrek. So, just to give you an idea of what else he's in that major movie. So,
but what'd you guys think of this whole scene here with Murph and Cooper? I think also whenever we get into the ending, gotta hit even harder.
when he's leaving?
No, when Coop's seeing it again through the bookshelf.
Oh,
he's just pleading with himself to fucking stay.
Oh, that, yeah. I mean, God, hey, that, just, I mean, I started the podcast by yelling about that. Like that's one of the biggest emotional beats in the movie, and it hits so hard.
That's what I kind of combine both a little bit. I know it's way farther down in the movie, but just this scene alone is just so fucking good, man.
When I first watched it, literal tears. Could not stop myself from crying. Tristan?
I mean, like I said, it hits every time. Like, it's one of the biggest emotional beats in the movie. The way the music swells, too. Like, I know we keep talking about the music, but it's Hans, so you have to talk about it. But the way it just accents the emotion, and the way he ranges from like desperation to hope to determination, like it's just, oh man, what I think it's probably, I'd say there are three moments that are really highlights of Matthew McConaughey's acting in this movie. I think the first one is when he drives away from Murph and the family while the music swells. I think that's a big beat for him. I think the second one is when he's watching the tapes and he's like, you know, seeing all the years he missed out on, and he's just sobbing there. And then I'd say this is the third beat where it's like, man, like Matthew McConaughey can act. I was talking shit before I saw this movie, but this man, he may be on to something.
Thank you. Glad that you at least are starting to get it.
I mean, well, I saw this movie like years ago, so I've been got it.
Okay, never mind. And just because you brought up Hans Zimmer's music, and I don't know if we'll have a section to talk about it, for all the people who have been trying to just replicate Hans Zimmer's sound and everything, and just been doing the freaking blahs for years, it's like, this is why Hans Zimmer's is great. It's because he's more than just the blahs. He is the person who can make you feel things through one freaking note. It's like,
he's more than just the blahs.
He's more than the blahs, man. He's more than the blahs.
Yeah. Just FYI, this music, I don't know if I said this earlier, but I want to say it again anyway. So this music, it's like, anytime something mysterious and wondrous is happening in my life, this is the music I hear. This is the music that pops into my head. It's always this one. It's crazy. Even in my dreams, I hear it. It's crazy. It's that good.
Well, you talk about Hans Zimmer, and Hans Zimmer is Hans Zimmer for a reason. I think in terms of popularity, he's probably only outdone by John Williams.
I would agree. I would agree with that. I'd say,
yeah.
If we're talking the top tiers, I'd say obviously John Williams, Hans Zimmer. I'd pop in Danny Elfman just for in terms of being an icon.
Michael Giacchino, I think
he's working his way up.
He's up and coming. Yeah,
he's working his way up there. Recently. But I would also throw in Alan Silvestri.
Good one.
Put up there.
But yeah, Hans Zimmer, and also the reason I bring up, oh, he's probably second only to John Williams, it's for a fucking reason. Hans Zimmer's great. I've talked about this before. And to bring up another Marvel reference, arguably one of the only few things I liked about The Amazing Spider-Man 2 was the theme he had for Electro. And it goes to tell you just how good Hans Zimmer is, to where it's like, in this bad movie, I can still find something great to talk about, and it's his score. When it comes to, and not just Hans Zimmer either, we talked about this with Chris Nolan movies before, it's the whole crew he puts together. Just so fucking talented, from cinematography to the art style to just special effects in general. This movie is just so visually pleasing to look at. It's not the most colorful, but it just looks so fucking good.
I think the biggest reason for this is, like, whenever someone believes that they should take out color in a movie, they do it so that way you get the dark atmosphere and everything. And with this one, they realize that the dark needs to make the lights pop more. And that's why all the white in the movie pops out. And when you see them, like, in the snow or, like, on the water planet, it's like they don't just start blending in like a lot of stuff tries to do now with the gray, with, like, the more muted color palettes. It's like, nah, it's like, we're going to make sure that stuff pops here. It's like, you get some bleed in, but that's because we're in different environments that we don't know too much about. But overall, we're not taking away the color of this movie.
Alright, let's get into talking about Miller's Planet here. This is where things really got complicated, and I loved it. When it comes to anything time travel or time related or anything around that sci-fi level, I'm fucking in. Sometimes it might not work out, cough, cough, the Flash TV show. Sometimes it's fucking great, like 12 Monkeys. The TV show. And with this movie here, I love the way that they explain it, that time is relative here. What is it? On Miller's Planet, 1 hour equals 7 years on Earth. So you had the stakes going into this thing. You know exactly, like, okay, they gotta get in, they gotta get out. And by the time they get out, you're still thinking, okay, maybe he just lost like 7 years. Maybe he lost 10 years. Okay, that's great. The just level my heart dropped when Romilly was like 23 years
fucking passed.
Years, man. Oh yeah. And shout
fuck.
Out it hits. But shout out to Romilly for not leaving them behind. Also for being one of the unsung heroes of this, because he really kept his head cool around all this stuff.
When at the beginning you think he was gonna be the one to fuck it up. He couldn't deal with being out in space and shit like that, and he's actually the one who actually kind of kept this cool the entire time. So that's an interesting, another subversion of where you thought the character would go.
Hot take.
Chris and the guy.
Well, I was going to say hot take. This guy's my fan cast to play Brainiac.
Really?
I can see it.
Right? Yeah. But no, I mean, in terms of I mean, really, we haven't talked about, like, the crew itself. Like, we spent time talking about the dynamic of the family, but the crew in general, like, I think they really work. I mean, you know, they kind of just murder Doyle, like, almost immediately, which is sad. But, you know, playing off of what you said, like, it is almost that you would expect someone like Romley to mess it up, because they do have the moments where clearly he's not comfortable with space travel, like, but he's the one that keeps it together. Like, I mean, he has 23 years to get comfortable with it. And then they just blow him up. Then Matt Damon just blows his ass up. You're like, damn it, Matt Damon. Like, you...
Did that seem like an accident still?
I don't know. I think he had that bot, like, rigged to blow up if anyone tried to mess with it. But, you know, so it wasn't necessarily, I guess it's what, more manslaughter than premeditated murder? But even so...
We'll talk about Man over here in a minute.
Yeah.
We really will. Because he's probably one of the most interesting characters in this movie.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Miller's planet, though, I'm glad you brought up Doyle and Romley here. Yeah. Because this is where the last time we see the whole crew together, because everybody starts dying off at this point. So, what did you think about Miller's planet and the fact that it's all covered in water, how Doyle dies, all that stuff?
It was intense. Just really intense. And, you know, after they're lost, well, not lost, after they're essentially stranded for, you know, however long, the moment where it's like the oh shit / aha moment where they're like, oh, wait, like, we didn't account for the time slippage. Like, she's probably... like, she probably just landed here, and she's only been dead for, like, maybe a few minutes. You're like, oh, shit, like, this is just...
I thought it was really cool.
It makes your heart drop.
Yeah, like, that, and it was 23 years, 4 months, and 8 days. Damn. Like, the only time, like, my heart dropped with a time skip that badly was after Thanos got his head chopped off in Avengers Endgame, and it was 5 years later. I was just like, what? No, what? And it's a very similar feeling to where I was like, ah, fuck, that's rough. And then seeing those videos that, Tristan, I think you were the one who mentioned it, with Matthew McConaughey's acting. And just seeing how his kids have aged. God, man, that's so fucking heartbreaking. Just imagining, like, oh, man, if I was going to... I don't even know how you deal with that.
This movie made me afraid of space because of those time slippages. It's like... Wait. So if I go on another planet, you mean I could just be there for like an hour, and I might miss like seven birthdays, or just like I might come back and find out, oh, that my best friend that was the same age as me, now he's nearly a decade older. It's like this movie made me afraid of space, but it also made me afraid of them just even going to their planets, because when I first watched this movie, I was like, oh god, he's gonna find the answer. Go back, find out his kids are dead. It's like, he's gonna be meeting his grandkids who are about to have kids of their own. It's like, that's gonna be how bad this gets. I'm glad I'm wrong. Well, not really, I'm not wrong, technically. But, you know the drill. It's like, it's crazy when you go in and it's like, you feel as though, oh... the worst you think because of your experience with movies is that someone is going to die, or maybe they're going to be stranded, lose time, and maybe they're like on a time crunch or everything. Nope, this movie says you've missed all this. You've missed all this time. You may get to see your kids again. They're going to be the same age as you. They're going to be like your siblings now. It's like, it's crazy. It's honestly heartrending when like you go through and see him just realizing he's missed so much. He's missed literally like his kid having a kid. He didn't even get to see his grandkids be born. It's like, it's so sad.
And one last thing before we move on to Man's Planet and Matt Damon's performance and all that stuff. One thing that I really liked that this movie did is it showed Jessica Chastain and Casey Affleck as these older versions of the characters. And it gave us stakes to Earth. And you have pretty much something to, I guess, root for on Earth. Because, I could see a lesser movie doing something where we just have the movie take place with Matthew McConaughey's character. And then at the end of it is this Planet of the Apes style ending to where, oh, the Earth's already destroyed. Too late. I could easily see a lesser movie trying to pull that off and it not working. So I really appreciated that this movie kept going back to Earth and showing these characters that were supposed to be wanting to be saved.
I'm sorry, I'm just thinking about this movie. It's such a good damn movie.
It is.
And like what you're saying about these characters like wanting to be saved, that's what makes it so much more. I think that's something that makes specifically the relationship between Murph and Cooper so much more heartbreaking. Like, I know that's not what we're talking about, but it's just such a big part of the movie that I can't help but relate it back to that core dynamic, because Cooper leaves because he wants to save Murph. I mean, yeah, it's also potentially for selfish reasons, like Donald says, but really, like, he wants to save his kids. And Murph is A, mad at him, because when she's younger, she doesn't understand. And then B, like, as an adult, it seems like almost that she necessarily, like, it's not that she doesn't want to be saved, but it seems like the reason that she's putting in so much work with Dr. Brand is she's like, no, like, I don't need you to save me, Dad. Like, I can do this myself. Like, you left. I don't need you, you know?
I saw it more like, for starters, when it comes to Coop's motivations, I 100% believe he went to go save his kids. I'm just saying, I think there's also an added layer to it, because there's things we do that we don't do for just one reason.
Yeah.
There's multiple. Yeah. And I think that was the thing with Cooper and why Donald kind of called him out, was like, hey, just make sure you're doing this because of your kids and you're not doing this because you want to go back out there. So that's where I was coming from with that.
See, I disagreed with Grandpa on that, because he was told, like, he can pilot everything, and he immediately said no. He didn't even hesitate, because he said, I've got my kids, I'm not doing it. So it's like, maybe that's there, but it's like, I have this big feeling that Cooper, maybe he saw it as a benefit, but his only reason, and if that wasn't there, wouldn't have done it, it was for his kids.
Yeah, and this goes into the whole Plan A, Plan B thing with Michael Caine's Brand. I keep calling the actor and then the character's names just because I keep sadly forgetting the character's names. Again, this is the first time I've seen this movie ever, so.
That's okay, I call him Evil Alfred in this movie a lot of times.
It's not too bad. But when it comes to Murph and Cooper, what you were talking about, Tristan, I kind of saw it more so like, he was trying to save her, and it kind of felt like Murph's trying to save him. To whereas he's trying to find them a planet, she's trying to solve the equation that would cause to where she can actually see him again. So, and that would help him out. So I kind of thought that they were kind of trying to save each other. And there's a wrench thrown in that when Bran goes out on his deathbed, decides to drop a fucking nuke. Like, I lied the whole time. So, well, thanks, man. You're not going to have to deal with this bullshit. You get to just die. Everybody else has to deal with it.
He gets to go gentle into that good night.
Yeah, and everybody else has to be like, what did you say? Oh, it's no, like, he's I'm sorry, dead.
What?
No, you revive him, and I'm going to ask him what he said.
But you said what, sir?
Put his ass in cryo. But to move on to the big cameo of this movie. Was it a big cameo?
I feel like it's not even just a cameo. I feel like it's more of a
role. It announced is what I'm asking.
No, it wasn't announced, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah.
To, I guess, the big cameo of this movie, which is Matt Damon playing Man. So I have here in my notes that they kept mentioning this guy, Man, and how remarkable he is. I didn't know this is who Matt Damon was playing, but there was a certain point where they said how great Man was when they were going to his planet. I was like, oh, he's going to be a bad guy. And still, the way they pulled this off was so fucking good. I loved Matt Damon's character in this movie. The fact that he still, in his twisted mind, thinks himself the hero. And he's just such a fucking coward. I love it.
Yeah. It also, like, is a good job of making you feel for him. because it's like from the beginning, it's like you see him just wanting that human contact over everything else. It's like, I've been alone for so long. Pray that you don't ever have to wonder what it feels like to long for human interaction again. It's like, God.
See, I can feel for him, but at the same time, it's what they all signed up for.
Yeah.
They knew all this going in.
I mean, it's what he inspired them all to sign up for.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's what I love about his character, is the fact that he preached all this, and everybody said how great he was. And he says, when he's trying to kill Coop, which kind of feels like a pointless endeavor, a little bit to me, to where he says, like, I never took into account that my planet wouldn't be the planet. That he's so self-centered that he thought no matter what planet he'd land on, it would be the right one. Because he's the top of the class guy. Just, I love this fucking character because of how much of a piece of shit he is.
Such a piece of shit. And yet also so, I guess, three-dimensional, just in the short amount of time that we see him.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's just, I think whenever you go to Chris Nolan, this might be a little bit of your English teacher in high school trying to be like, what did the curtains mean? But I think a little bit to where the Nolans here were kind of trying to go for, all right, what if we kind of put some of the worst traits in humans here, to where we preach all this really noble things, and then we turn around, and when the dust really settles, we're terrible sometimes. And that's what I think they tried to go for with Man's character.
I think they pulled it off.
Yeah, I think they pulled it off great, to where we see a character like Cooper, where the dust settles, and he's the hero. We kind of see the worst of humanity, too. There's where it just, it's really fucking good, man. I love these characters so much. I love this story. With all the craziness around it, this story is just, you can really just keep going back at humans and stuff like that with it, and I just love that. But, yeah, throughout this planet, we learn that Man's planet has 67 cold hours, and the nights are also 67 colder hours. And the entire time he keeps saying, like, oh, beneath the surface there's an entirely inhabitable planet. Entire time, I don't know how you guys felt when you watched it. I was like, oh, no. This planet ain't inhabitable. I'm looking at it. What are you talking about?
I was like, bro, this looks like the surface. What the fuck you mean?
Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, it was, when I first watched it, it's like, at first I believed him, and then I was like, nah, this guy's full of crap.
Then we have Romilly's death, which admittedly, is better than Doyle's.
Better than Doyle's.
He at least gets to do something. And he doesn't die like a complete moron like Doyle did. But overall, just, I really like this with Bran. This is probably the best moment for Bran, to where she saved Cooper's life and everything. But just, this was probably the key scene in the movie, other than the family dynamic stuff. The key scene without the family, essentially, I would say.
I would say this, and the scene right before he goes into Gargantua. If we're talking about key scenes without the family, I'd say those are the two.
100% agree. Those are definitely the scenes where you feel the most, for sure. And then we have exactly what you're talking about. Everybody heads back into Gargantua, to where, you guys are going to have to correct me here, because I might have to see this scene again. But it kind of seemed like Cooper was kind of sacrificing himself.
Yes.
To get everybody through the wormhole, and then he accidentally goes through it. So,
well, no, he was, it wasn't that they were all trying to get through the wormhole, it's that they were trying to use the wormhole to slingshot further to Wolf Edmund's planet, because they didn't have the fuel left, and the only way to do that was to, without them having the fuel, was to push the Endurance away by dropping himself and Tars into Gargantua.
Which would have cost them, I believe, 50-something years?
It was a lot of years.
But yeah, what do you guys think of this whole sacrifice and the scene there? I think, to me, it really showed how far Coop came with the technology characters, Kase and Tars. We didn't talk about Kase and Tars in this movie.
They're great.
They bring great comedic levity to it.
And it's typically so, like, deadpan, which I think is lends itself to what we were talking about, where it's not the traditional, like, ha ha ha, we're trying to make everybody laugh at them. He's like, oh, okay, that's funny. That's a good bit.
And again, we're not saying that's bad. It's just, it doesn't work with every movie.
It just doesn't work with every movie. Yeah. That's all.
Although I do gotta say, they are great 2001 A Space Odyssey callbacks, because, like, the whole thing is, like, I plan on killing everyone in the space station and everything. I was like, oh, yeah. It's like, they do kind of feel like...
Well, we turned it down about 10% there. Turned down the humor. Then the scene at the end where Cooper's fixing TARS.
Oh, and he's like, self-destruct.
Yeah. I was like, how about 65? And he made another joke, was like, we can turn it to 50. And he just shut up. I thought that was great. Perfect. But what did you guys think of the whole sacrifice scene here?
It's one of the scenes that makes me like Anne Hathaway's brand so much, because, you know, for a lot of the movie, they are kind of adversarial. Like, they don't hate each other, but they're giving each other shit. But when he's like, no, like, you know, to go somewhere, you got to leave something behind. And she's like, no, please don't. Like, God, like, that moment just fucking hits. It hits for me. It's like, damn, they really do like care about each other, because they are, you know, trauma bonded, and they have been through a lot together. And like, they do, you know, desperately need one another. And I think that exchange right there, like that brief bit of emotion, helps it play a little bit better at the end of the movie when Murphy's like, no, go find Brand. I mean, nothing's ever going to make it play completely, you know, 100%, because you're like, all right, well, you know, she's got like 2 hours left to live. You might as well just hang out with her and then go find Brand. Like, nothing's going to change. But yeah, no, I think it's a great scene, and then it leads right into the Tesseract, which is an even doper scene.
Yeah, so let's get into the big twist of this movie, where Cooper goes into the Tesseract, the black hole, and fuck, what a twist.
What a twist.
The fact that he was the ghost all along, something that the movie tries, like, it's a story throughout Murph's entire arc in the movie, is what's this ghost thing. And you chalk it up to being, like, something scientific that they'll figure out. And then it turns out it's Cooper in the fifth dimension here trying to get a message to Murph. And it's just so fucking great. And we talked about the humans thing, and the sound as cheesy as possible. The fact that, you know, they got this message across all these dimensions and solar systems, and they were able to communicate with each other there. I think it's just fucking great.
So the Tesseract scene is one of my favorites. Again, Matthew McConaughey acting his fucking ass off. It's like, I swear, if this guy could cry his face literally off, he would have done it for the scene. But it, I think my favorite part about the Tesseract itself was that it was all the theorizing. It's like, you feel the scientists of Cooper coming through and everything, and that's been a major part of the movie. It's like, they're all scientists to a degree. And it's like, they're like, okay, are they aliens, beings above us? And it's like, wait, they're humans and everything. And it's like, yeah, it's a little cheesy, but honestly, it works when you think, like, yeah, this is kind of like a self-preservation thing. We're trying to, like, send you guys this message so that way you guys have the information to, like, save the species and, like, continue our existence.
The whole thing's a little cheesy, where it's like, oh, the answer is love and all that stuff, and it's, well...
Yeah.
At the same time, it fucking works, because you give a shit about the characters. The thing that people, I think, sometimes forget about cheesiness... is it fucking hits.
It hits when it's done well. Yeah.
Whenever you don't care about a character, you kind of complain about it sounding cheesy and the dialogue sucks and all this stuff. But when something hits and you give a damn about these characters, which you do because this movie's written pretty damn well, it just works.
It works, man.
Cheese is pretty good when you know how to use it. But it can also be pretty rank if you leave it out too long.
See... one, a nice cheese analogy. Two, this movie is like a Todd Howard game, guys. It just works.
Don't you dare put Todd Howard into this.
Okay.
How dare you?
Okay,
you mean,
I think...
You mean God Howard?
Okay, I think Tristan has a point, though. It just works.
It just works. Taylor, it just works.
Hope Starfield ends up being good. Anyway... That felt appropriate to add here. But anyways, yeah, I love this whole thing, man. It's just... And then the twist where you guys were talking about with the aliens or just humans from the future.
it's a really, like, simple way of doing it, where it's like, yeah, you know what? Great. Cool, because this is what you said.
Simple but effective.
Yeah, it's effective. I don't have to learn any more lore, like, don't have to, because even if it had been just aliens, they're like, oh, they're just from a higher dimension or whatever, then you'd leave the movie wondering why, you know? But now it's like, oh, no, it's self-preservation. You're like, oh, okay, well, shit, yeah, that's clever, I guess. Great. Cool.
Some people might still want to, like, if they were walking out of theater or just watching this movie at home, where they were like, yeah, it would have been cool to see how humans got to that point. Sure. But it's not really necessary. I can put two and two together and be like, okay, so eventually their technology does grow and humanity just keeps growing like it does now, to where we would have that kind of technology in the future. So I think you can put two and two together without feeling like it's a disservice to the plot. All right. Anything else about this twist here?
Yeah, I was going to say, the one more thing about the twist, though, like, because we talked about it earlier, but since we're back in the section where it's, you know, where it happens, still want to go back and talk about Cooper touching Brand's hand. Because that's a moment where it's like, yeah, once you know that, oh, okay, like, he was the ghost and whatnot, and the humans are they the aliens, it really, like, it does what I said, the scene where he sacrifices himself to save her, like, It reinforces that moment of like, oh, okay, now I kind of buy a bit more that he would go find her, you know? Like, because it shows how, like, connected they actually are, you know? That he went out of his way to, like, you know, touch her and, like, essentially let her, like, it felt like he was letting her know that things would be okay.
I kind of saw it, maybe this might be just me thinking logically, that when he figured out, oh, this is what needs to be done, it wasn't me who was being called. It was my daughter. She's the one who's going to figure out the formula and figure all this out. I'm basically just the guinea pig. So I kind of saw it as him trying to close the loop, knowing, okay, so if she does shake that person's hand, that needs to be me. That's why I took from it. That he was just trying to close the loop as it is.
Yeah, and again, I took for it sort of like a weird creation of Adam thing because of the way that their hands were touching. It really went back to that Michelangelo painting. Maybe I'm wrong. But normally...
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, but normally it implies creation and the what's it called? Opposite of ruin.
Genesis?
Genesis, yeah, the genesis of humanity and everything. So I thought, like, that was supposed to be what it meant. It's like, oh, the genesis of humanity and, since they have to make Plan B happen, you know, reinstate humanity on other worlds. It's like, I thought it fit.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of, like, I mean, definitely I like the Genesis thing. But in terms of him closing the loop, the way they shoot the beginning when she touches the hand is a bit confusing, because it almost seems like they're not in the same, like, she's not in the same room as Cooper when they do that, even though, you know, there's only one room in the ship. But I guess Cooper would have noticed that, like, she touched the hand then, but he's not the one who acknowledges it. Isn't it, like, Romley who's like, hey, what are you doing, you know, like, when reality starts to warp as they're entering Gargantua? Because I feel like Cooper would have been so focused on keeping them, you know,
alive
that he probably wouldn't have looked back and be like, hey, what the hell are you doing, you know? Like,
well, I think it was also said that there's nothing he could do. That's like, he's just gonna go through the wormhole. There's nothing he can do on his end. So I think he does look back and see Bran shake the alien's hand. So,
well, there you go.
I don't know. I could think you can interpret it a few ways. So check us out on Nerdstop Movies next week when we decipher what the curtains mean on Breaking Bad.
Let me tell you, they stand for life.
I love how we do it. Like, I know it gets made fun of sometimes, but I find the shit kind of fun. Sometimes they just be like, all right, what are we taking from this?
You gotta, hey, you know, death of the author is a thing. You gotta take, you know, what we get out of art is at least partially what we bring to it, you know?
And also, I'd rather do this and be entertained than to sit here for an hour and bitch about a movie.
Like Thor: Love and Thunder? TV show.
Like, you know, Thor, I didn't say Love that Thunder. Movie, but
well, we did.
There's a reason we're a little down on comedy right now. In movies, I think it might be because of Thor Love.
I never want to laugh again because of that movie. It's ruined laughter for me.
But let's get into the ending. Let's wrap this thing up. So you guys kind of, I think both of you kind of have a little bit of an issue with how this movie wraps up, with Cooper just kind of fucking off at the end instead of staying with his daughter when she's dying.
Yeah.
I kind of get it though.
I get it. I just don't like it. I don't dislike enough that it takes away from the movie for me. Really, it's more just like, all right, bro. Like, realistically speaking, she's gonna be alive for 2 more hours. Like, you can have more than one conversation with your daughter before you fucking peace out.
Well, I saw more or so like her final wish, to where it's like, hey, and it's, I didn't say it as like hate towards Coop or like I don't like you or I disconnected from you. It was just,
I think she got over any of her hate when she found out that he was the ghost. So,
I think it was more so like, hey, I love you, you're my dad, all that stuff.
Yeah. But she it did feel like she was absolving him of that guilt. And it was what you said of like, no parent should have to see their child die. But again, there's no guarantee she's going to die like in the next 5 seconds. Like I said, I think she's got a good 2 hour window. Like, he could have had more than one, you know, 1 minute conversation where they ask what happened to Tom, you know.
Yeah, it's like, ask
like, not that we care, but like, Cooper, you did have another kid. Like, just say, hey, how old was Tom when he died, or any of these like Tom's grandkids.
Yeah, it's like, ask her about her life, meet the family.
You're not alone. These are your relatives. See, Cooper,
I kind of get that part though. I get like the Tom part, you're right. With the other family, you're just kind of a weird ghost.
Sure, but then
like a literal ghost at that point.
When you
think
he's 120.
He's 124 years old at the end of the movie.
True.
Technically speaking.
True.
He knows none of these people.
No, but here's the thing. Some of those people, Murph's adult kids, they wouldn't be like, are you my fucking grandpa? Like, I'm just saying, there's room for them to talk. And, you know, maybe, I guess they'll have that opportunity when they eventually get to Edmund's planet or whatever. Because, like, clearly, they're on the cusp of getting there if Cooper can make it there in his little ranger ship by himself. But I don't know. It was just like, all right, guys. Like, I like the way the movie wraps up. They put a nice little bow on it. I'm like, all right, this is a sweet ending. It's saccharine. But just realistically, I'm like, hey, I'm Grandpa Cooper. Like, fucking, let's go play baseball in the center field or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go break someone's window from below the window.
I'm an avid baseball hater. So, I think the most unrealistic part of this movie is the fact that baseball would survive.
What sport do you think would survive?
Soccer.
Basketball or soccer. By far, I think it would survive. Look, I love American football. There's no way it would survive through all this. There's too much equipment, all the people. No, it wouldn't. But basketball, soccer.
There's a reason why soccer is like the most played sport throughout the world. It's like, it's 2 goals. And your own 2 feet with a ball. And it's like, anything can be a goal. You just need a ball, and you're good. It's like, soccer is probably going to be the sport that's going to be here till like, the heat death of the universe.
Boxing would still be around, I think. People just love the
wrestling. Yeah. Any type of the physical, like, the any type of physical combat.
Yeah.
Hockey's gone. Hockey's
out of there. Swimming, probably not really that much of a thing.
As long as we're near water, I think swimming.
Yeah, but how much water, like, how many bodies of water do they have on that? Like, probably have a plumbing system, but, like, I don't necessarily know how many, like, pools they have on this interview.
Point taken.
But anyway, it's a weird tangent. Getting back to the ending, the last thing I will say about Cooper's ending is I do like how he does kind of literally become a ghost, to where he's not the person that saved the Earth. It was Murph. To whereas he kind of feels like he's the afterthought that doesn't really know where he fits. They weren't really looking for him.
Well,
that, I think they said that they just found him.
Yeah, he was floating out by Saturn.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was floating out by Saturn, and like, I think they said they got him like 15 minutes before his air ran out or something. But it's not like they don't know him and everything, because it's like the moment they...
No, they know him. He's just a footnote rather than the headline. The headline's his daughter, and I think there's something to where... I think it's just McConaughey's performance to where he kind of takes pride in that, to where it's like, oh, yes, I'm so glad that I get to just go off and be nothing, and my daughter is the one who got all the attention and fame and glory from saving the Earth. So that's why I think it worked for me, is that I think I was just connected to McConaughey's character there.
Yeah, there was something else I was trying to say, but it's like, now I can't remember it. And I know it was important, but
apparently it wasn't that important.
Tristan, go on ahead. Oh, wait. I got it. Okay, so I love the whole thing of we start the movie at the end with this one. Normally it can be pretentious as hell, but I like it being like something here. We see like the interview and everything. It was a documentary of Murphy's life. We got to see like all the recordings and everything about the past and everything. We're us seeing the documentary, the one that's literally outside their house. It's like, it's nice.
And a little fun, well, I don't know how fun it is, an interesting little tidbit about, you know, the documentary footage. Like, every interview or whatever that's not Murph, like, that's from an actual interview, like, actual documentary about, like, the Dust Bowl.
Oh.
Yeah. So those are, like, real people being like, yeah, like, we couldn't breathe. And we couldn't eat anything. So.
Well, now what I feel sadder. What a
fun tidbit there, Tristan. Yeah, great one.
That's interesting. I didn't say it was, like, fun.
Yeah.
I corrected myself.
Yeah, he did. He corrected himself.
It's interesting. I don't know. It's like, oh, shit. That makes it feel authentic.
No, it is very interesting. I was just giving you shit for it.
They also planted a shitload of corn for this movie. Like, all those were real cornfields.
Yeah.
Always practical.
Nolan loves practical.
It's all about that corn. That corn life.
But we gotta go ahead and get out of here. Tristan is on a time crunch.
I'm
so
on a
let's
time
wrap
crunch. Gotta get through Gargantua.
Ourselves up. Let's get it. Before we get into our final ratings, let's get out our final pros and cons. Whenever it comes to our final ratings, I need to really come up with a new template for this since I'm combining the segments together. What would you give Interstellar on a scale of 1 to 10? As always, just because we give something a 5 or a 6, it doesn't mean we hated it. And we give something a 9 or 10, it doesn't mean it's perfect. We typically grade these things more positively, and it's just an arbitrary number meant for fun. Tristan, let's start with you, man. Give us your pros and cons for Interstellar, along with your final rating.
Pros, the cast, the visuals, the music, just pretty much, the pro is pretty much everything about this movie, honestly, for me. The only two cons I can really think of, occasionally at the beginning, some of the dialogue, a little clunky. I'm like, all right, I get what you're doing, and it works, but could have been phrased a little differently. And then, other con, Cooper, meet your grandkids. That's all I'm saying. Like, you don't even have to be in the room when Murph dies, but I don't know, meet little Cooper Jr. or some shit. That's all. That's all. As for ratings, I give this is a 10 out of 10 for me.
Drew, pros and cons, final rating.
So, just like Tristan said, pro, almost everything. It's like, there's really no thing that this movie lacks in, and it excels in a lot of stuff. My favorite pro is Matthew McConaughey. My second favorite pro is the music. Like I said, this is the music I hear in my dreams whenever I'm in a fantastical, wonderful land. Even in the fantasy ones, weirdly enough, even though this is a way more sci-fi style stuff. Cons, kind of the same as Tristan's again, because it's like, my only problems were clunky dialogue and the whole not meeting your family.
Meet your grandkids!
It's like, that was one of the things you were crying about earlier in the movie. And I get it. It's like, oh, no parent should watch their child die. It's harkening back to Tom, and he had to watch his kid die. And it's like, but seriously, it's like, let this happen. It's like, he didn't even think like he was going to see you, Murph. He didn't even think he was going to be able to see you. But besides that, yeah, it's like, 10 out of 10. It's like, I always go back to this movie. It's like, I haven't counted how many times I've seen it, but I'm pretty sure I watch this 3 times a year. So count up how many times that is. I don't know.
As I've said many times before, this was the first time I've seen this movie. And there will be more. It's going to be on my favorite movies of all time list for sure. I don't know what that would be. It would be like Tristan's, if I would have 52 or 100 or 50, whatever. It's on that list. It's one of the best movies I've seen. That said, I still have some problems with it, and I just don't want... I don't think I can give it a 10 out of 10. Because I have problems with the way that the two other astronauts die, Doyle and Romilly. I do have some issues with the dialogue at the beginning. I agree with Tristan 100%. And there's just some moments that I think didn't fully land that I think should have at the beginning. Really, whenever we get into space, that's shit's 10 out of 10. Perfect. But I'd give this a 9 out of 10. Again, it's on my favorite movies of all time list, but it still has some issues. But let's go ahead and get out of here. What are we working on, and where can people find us? Tristan, what you working on? Where can people find you?
I got a few irons in the fire right now, but one of the things I am actually working on is tied into my socials. As I say every week, you can find me on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram at BackIssueBins. I have finally started posting on TikTok, everybody. It's finally happened. I'm a TikToker now. Oh my God. I'm going to be blowing up real soon. So you guys need to get in on the ground floor.
And what have you become?
What have I become? Well, I'm TikToking about comics and movie stuff. So it's, you know. But anyway, everyone should go follow me because I'm putting out what I think is some pretty entertaining stuff. So that right now is what I'm focusing on, aside from, you know, the various podcast ventures that we got going on behind the scenes.
You can find me on at @DrewGarrison_ Twitter and Instagram. Taylor, take it away.
As for me, you can find me on these podcasts here. Nothing too special. You can also find us on our Discord, which is the best way to get in touch with us for now. I know I've been saying that for a while, but we actually do have some movement on some stuff we're going to be doing here. We're going to have a Twitter account up very soon with some branding and some more stuff. Very excited about that. Also, consider leaving us a rating. It would also be tremendous if it was a positive rating. Also, be sure to check out thenerdstash.com for all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, television, and so much more. We got reviews, guides, opinion pieces, lists, you name it, it's over at thenerdstash.com. I want to thank Tristan and Drew for joining me. I want to thank anyone for listening in. Next week, we got a special episode.
We got to say, we got a spectacular episode coming up.
We'll be covering our first TV series retrospective since Daredevil Season 2 when we look at Season 1 of the potentially underrated animated series Spectacular Spider-Man.
That's its definitive.
And by the way, I do want to mention, the show just went on Netflix. We had no idea that was happening.
We didn't.
So that was a fucking great
surprise. The universe was on our side.
We had no idea.
Our Spidey senses tingled and we just felt it coming.
So that was great. So if you haven't seen the show yet and you're hearing this and you want to watch it and then you want to hear three idiots talk about it on a podcast, check it out on Netflix.
Two idiots and one distinguished spider fan.
Yeah, Taylor and Drew are also on the show. So don't let me leave, Murph!
Oh, that was a great way of turning it around on me. But we will see you guys next time.